The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
I need you to knock some sense into me. I'm sure you can.
Yeah, I don't know.
I enjoy listening to you. I don't always agree with everything.
All right, enough of this persiflage.
So, you want my question?
I'm certainly not going to get myself in trouble by telling you what to do.
That makes great sense. Gosh, that's good.
That I overwhelm you with words and wisdom?
I've got 7 kids. I feel like I could call you every day.
Wait, you're telling me I'm wrong? Disconnect.
Yes, I am, Dr. Ray.
You just need to tune in to Dr. Ray, honey. He's got all the answers.
Am I right or am I right?
Probably.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Very nice to have you with me. This is The Doctor Is In, as the man said. This version, this variant of The Doctor Is In is Look Back Friday. Take previous calls, edited at the capable hands of producer man Andrew Krucek, and comment more on them. Any particular call, even though we don't do therapy here, any particular call usually brings up some question mark or perhaps a word that is used that we don't have time to define. There's many, many reasons why a look back call makes a look back Friday. The umbrella reason, of course, is I just want to talk more. It's that simple. St. Thomas Aquinas said, for motivations, follow the self. So I can justify it. I can say, well, she brought up something I think that we could comment on a little more that might be helpful to all of you. Or a word was used that I didn't exactly explain well. Or there was something in between the lines that I thought maybe we could comment on. Well, you get through all of that, it's just, I got more to say. Come right down to it, you know? So we'll get to those look back calls. I get on my email feed. I get something called Word Genius. And they send you 10 vocabulary words, and they give you 4 choices to learn these words. And they do a lot of repetition, so the words sink in. Well, here's one I thought was, hopefully, particularly relevant for this program. What is a synonym for sagacious? Now, I'll give you the 4 choices. Subconscious, judicious, capricious, or avaricious. Sagacious means extremely wise. So let's find out if the judicious word fits. Searching, entering, Word Genius, feed me here. All right, punch judicious. Having or showing keen mental discernment and good judgment. Well, I've not been accused of that. A lot of times they say, what is an antonym for sagacious? And that would be, what would the word be? Foolish, maybe? Okay, so I just thought I'd share that with you. Bill O'Reilly used to do that. Remember the word of the day kind of thing? Some years ago, way, way back, my wife for Christmas got me a C.S. Lewis calendar. And 365, maybe 66, little bits and pieces, excerpts from Lewis's writings. And I pulled out from this stack that I have in front of me maybe 30 of them that I thought were particularly helpful to a program like this. This is one I want to comment on because it is becoming very loud in my ears. It's speaking to me pretty heavily. He says this, and it's from the book An Experiment in Criticism, which I've never read that book. The process of growing up is to be valued for what we gain, not for what we lose. As I get older, I have to push back the thoughts of, I can't do what I used to do. Whether it's playing sports, whether it's running fast, whether it is lifting the same amount of weight that I used to be able to lift when I was in my 30s. Whatever it is, whether it's getting out of bed without your back hurting, whatever it is, I tend to focus inordinately upon the physical. And if you've had people sit around and listen to them talk, especially those of us who are getting older, they will talk very much about maladies, about what they've lost, about what they don't have, what they can't do, et cetera, et cetera. Maybe it's loss of friends, people passing away. And Lewis says, basically getting older, he uses the word growing up, but I think you could substitute getting older, is to be valued for what we gain. And as I think about that, I realize that I think I'm closer to Christ now than I was when I was 30. And if you view that as the absolute, infinitely most important thing in your life, then you want to be able to say it's a small price to pay not to be able to do what I used to be able to do, or not to have the energy I used to have, if in fact I'm closer to our Lord. That's huge. That's beyond description. Or if you say, I've learned by God's grace to be more at peace, or to be more tolerant, or to be more giving, or to be more understanding, or to be more forgiving. Those are all virtues. And if you've gained in the virtues because you've had the grace to help you do so and the will to cooperate with the virtue, that's a wonderful gain. And I have to keep reminding myself of that. You know, every time I get under those weights and I push them up and I think to myself, you know, 20 years ago, I used to be able to do the X. And I have to tell myself, so? What you gain if you let God work on you is infinitely more important than what you lose. And I think about this. And I think about what I know now regarding my faith, or what I'm able to do regarding my desire for certain devotions, or appreciating the Mass more, or praying the Rosary in Aramaic while I levitate above broken glass, whatever it is. That's come to me because I've gotten older. I didn't have that when I was 28. Yeah, I was Catholic and my faith was important to me, but in the words of the song by Roy Clark, "Yesterday when I was young, so many happy songs were waiting to be sung, so many wild pleasures lay in store for me." Yeah, that's what you look at when you're 28. You got stuff floating out in front of you, boy. Who knows what kinds of successes you're going to have, what kind of people you're going to meet, what kind of marriage you're going to have. It's all just unknown. And having kids and everything like that, you're focused on the goods, if you will, and they are goods, of this life. But I find as I gotten older and I look back on all that, it was important, but it wasn't as important as I made it. And I'm particularly talking about the pursuits of the self as opposed to children or beautiful marriage. No, I'm talking about chasing success or chasing more income or whatever it is. And living longer makes me look back. A small example. Used to play a lot of softball. And we were good. And we were good for many, many years. And it was so important to win that tournament. So important to dominate the league. And important enough that when we didn't, I was disappointed. I was frustrated. There were times when I couldn't believe the umpire made that call. And I look back on it now and I think, who even knows about that tournament or about that league? Nobody. All that's left over is a bits and pieces of memories in my own mind. Or something career-wise that I thought was so important. so important to do. And I look back on it, and it's like, yeah, okay, it was part of it, but it wasn't anywhere near as important as I made it. And I'm realizing the stuff of life that is most important, if you cooperate with it, you gain it as you get older. You walk closer to Christ because you're trying harder, with his help, to do the things that you need to do to be a better disciple. And that, in some respects, comes with age. I think it was Father Benedict Rochelle that said, we are allowed to live longer, in most cases, so that we have time to become closer to Christ. For me, that's been very true. Very, very true. What I can't do anymore physically, or what I can't do anymore in just raw health, or even pursuit of career goals, I've more than gained, compensated for in growing up. And it's not that I'm any holier than I was. It's just that I've got my eyes focused on the more important stuff. And that kind of happens naturally when you move through life. And when you're not 31 years old and you're thinking you got another 50 plus years in front of you. No, as you get closer to the end of your life and you realize what really, really matters. And that's a gain. That is a gain of all gains. Thank you, C.S. Lewis, for writing that. I know you didn't write it for me, but it sure helped me. When we come back, I want to go to Kathy from Pennsylvania. Her husband passed away, and she was really kind of wondering why she hasn't gotten any signs from him yet.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria Mutual Funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
The Heart of the Interior Life with Elizabeth Jingle.
Within the context of St. Ignatius of Loyola's spiritual masterpiece called The Spiritual Exercises, we find what is called the 14 Rules for the Discernment of Spirits. We may consider, where did St. Ignatius' spiritual teaching on discernment originate from? The following is from his autobiography, which highlights the moment his spiritual teaching on discernment is born, when his eyes were opened a little. Yet there was this difference. When he was thinking about the things of the world, he took much delight in them. But afterwards, when he was tired and put them aside, he found that he was dry and discontented. But when he thought of going to Jerusalem, barefoot and eating nothing but herbs and undergoing all the other rigors that he saw the saints had endured, not only was he consoled when he had these thoughts, but even after putting them aside, he remained content and happy. He did not wonder, however, at this, nor did he stop to ponder the difference, until one time his eyes were opened a little.
For more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net.
This program brought to you in part by Ave Maria Florida, a big kind of small town, where golf carts take you everywhere and there's always something fun around the corner. Discover championship golf, resort-style amenities, and a town center full of shopping and dining. With Ave Maria University and Ave Maria Catholic Church at its heart, it's a community full of connection and charm. More than 25 model homes are available for viewing. More information can be found at AveMaria.com. That's AveMaria.com.
This is Cy Kellett. Join me for Catholic Answers Live. It's 2 hours dedicated to Catholic apologetics and evangelization. Designed for Catholics and non-Catholics alike, it's your opportunity to hear from and talk with some of the leading apologists and theologians in the church today. You've got questions? We've got Catholic answers. Catholic Answers Live, weekdays, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Spiritual speaking 200 to 400 words per minute, with gusts up to 800. Nice to have you with me on this Look Back Friday. The doctor is in. Kathy from Pennsylvania called, and her husband had passed away. Now, this call was a little while back, so I don't remember how closely his passing was to her call. We'll find out here. But she seems to be looking for some kind of sign, some kind of, if you will, contact from him. And if I recall the call, it was that she had some friends or people she knew who talked about similar type experiences.
Well, today is the 1 year anniversary of my husband's death, and I just went to Mass in our old parish when I lived in Maryland. And in the altar, it was all white, beautiful roses, like it was Easter Sunday, probably from someone else's funeral, but it was so beautiful. And then I went through the hospice grieving thing, and so many had, you know, they had dreams, and they heard their husband's or their beloved's voice, and or else they felt their presence, or, you know, it was like real tangible for them. And I haven't had any of that. And then I just talked to a friend whose wife had died, and she appeared to me in a dream, and all she said was, "It's great, it's great." And then she disappeared. Like, he described her, you know, beautifully. And I've not even had a dream about things that we did before he died. I mean, he's a really good guy. You know, we had 5 natural children, and then when we're in our late 50s, we had 3 guardian children, and proving God's sense of humor. We suffered a lot in the last 6 years with his cancer. He is a really good guy. I know I've been told, you know, always pray for the dead, because if they're still in purgatory, they still need your prayers. And so I've always prayed, you know, the dad rests in peace, and then my brother and my nephew and, you know, my family. And I haven't had any signs at all like he's in heaven. And so I'm a little, after the day in the Mass, I'm talking to a friend, and it's not, you know, it's pray, trust, and don't worry. And I don't worry, and I do trust, although sometimes I question how much I trust when I do worry about our kids. That's another topic. But it's just a little confusion about, do I still pray for him like he's in purgatory, or do I, and I talk to him, and then does he hear my voice when he's in heaven? Does he hear my voice when he's in purgatory? I guess that's the bottom line.
Well, boy, Kath, you asked a boatload of questions. I thought it was going to be relatively simple. I thought it was going to be, how are you interpreting this notion that you haven't yet had a dream? So I'll start with that question. Does this mean something to you that you yet haven't had a dream?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I don't even know whether I should think that way. Does it mean something to me? I'm wondering why I don't have that. But maybe that's God's will, that I don't, that I just hang on to my faith and pray more and trust.
Well, do you think, after your friends have told you that they've had similar dreams, do you think, well, what's my problem here? How come I'm not getting any?
You're absolutely right. Say, hey, God, come on. I do say that.
Well, okay, let's be careful we don't overinterpret all this. All right, so let me give you a couple of things to ponder. From a purely neurological perspective, you have to wake up either during a dream or shortly thereafter to remember it. So.
I bet that doesn't even work. I'm not forgetting so much. I'm even older than you are, Dr. Ray, older than dirt.
No, there's no way you're older than me and still alive. No, that's not going to be. Okay. So given that, it may be that your sleep is good and you've had these dreams and you just can't remember them. There's no way. That's why people say, I never dream. Oh, of course you do. Everybody dreams. We all dream. And I don't doubt for a moment that you've had dreams about your husband, but you just didn't remember him. You didn't wake up. Okay, so that's the first thing. Got that. It is totally meaningless that you have not yet recalled any dreams about your husband, because that's nothing to indicate your love, nothing to indicate that somehow you you just didn't have the relationship that your friend has. No, that doesn't mean that at all. Nothing to that. Okay, that's the second thing. Here's the third thing. You're probably going to have one. Who knows when? It's only been a year. I dreamt about my dad some years after he died. Finally had a dream about Pop. Didn't have any for years. Okay. So that's another thing. It's still relatively early. Let me give you another one. Do you pray for him in purgatory? Of course you do. Oh, absolutely. You just keep praying all the way out. Because if, in fact, he's in heaven after being purified, and we don't know exactly how that works, those prayers go to somebody else. That's all. They're sitting there with the treasury of merit, and they just go to help someone else. So, of course, you pray for him. Can he hear your voice? I would imagine he can. Most people think that's all speculation, but most people think that somehow, some way, there is a communication that we don't know about. You know, he doesn't have ears, so somehow it's got to get to him in some way that it registers. Now, the final one: would it be wrong to ask for a sign? Right.
Right.
Okay, no, it's not wrong. But I think where you could be wrong is if you don't get a sign, you think it means something. The main thing here would be that she's reasonably confident that her husband, as one who loved the Lord and attempted to live in his grace, is in heaven. You can be somewhat comfortable with that. She knows him. She didn't know exactly how purgatory works. We tend to look at purgatory like it's our time. He died a year ago. Would he still be going through a year's worth of purification? Well, obviously, time is completely different after death. So does purgatory occur in what would be a flash of a moment for us? Does it occur in some quick perspective outside of time? I don't know. We don't know. So to pray for him, which has always been a teaching of the church, all the way back into the Old Testament, to pray for folks, that's a good thing to do. The fact that, now, see, I didn't talk about this at the time, and I thought about it, but I didn't want to get into it, which is there any way you're interpreting this as, because you didn't get some sign, whatever that might be, a dream, a penny, a voice, a sense, whatever it is that her friends were talking about in their situation, because you didn't, that means he's not able. And why is he not able? Because he's not in heaven or purgatory. He's somewhere else. That would be totally inappropriate to think that way. That's a stretch. You don't conflate the two. You don't say, because I haven't gotten a comforting signal, I don't know where he is. Now, you can't make the call for where any of our loved ones go, but you can have a certain sense of security having known the person and known how much they loved the Lord and tried to live as his disciples. You could have a certain confidence in our Lord's promises. Yeah, you got that. But it's kind of interesting. You know, I heard her describe the various ways that her friends had said, here's indications that I got from my passed away spouse or loved one. Okay. But as a psychologist, you know, when you start talking about, well, I just had a sense. Whatever that means, whatever that sense was it willful hope? Whatever it was. But I wouldn't chase it so far as to say, therefore, I got my guarantee that my loved one is in the arms of the Lord. Your security in knowing that comes from our Lord's promises. It doesn't come from interpreting anything that you could say was a sign.
When we ask God our Father to deliver us from evil, are we referring to an idea or a person? We are not referring to an abstraction, says the Catholic Catechism. We are referring to a person, the evil one, Satan, the fallen angel, who throws himself across God's plan of salvation accomplished in Christ. Jesus labeled Satan a murderer, a liar, and the father of lies. We do not pray alone. We pray in communion with the Church for the whole human family. Our interdependence in the drama of sin and death is turned into solidarity in the body of Christ, the communion of saints. If one entrusts himself to God, one does not dread the devil. Victory over Satan, the prince of the world, was attained once and for all when Jesus freely gave himself over to death in order to give us his life. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
The Catholic Church teaches that Jesus Christ is literally and wholly present, body and blood, soul and divinity, under the appearances of bread and wine. Feeding 5,000 from a boy's 5 barley loaves and 2 fish, as recorded in John chapter 6, is quite a miracle. Yet the next day, Jesus downplays it in verse 27. Do not work for the food that perishes, but for the food that endures for eternal life, which the Son of Man will give you. Likewise, God's provision of manna to the Israelites in the desert was also a great miracle, yet Jesus similarly downplays it in verse 49. Your ancestors ate the manna in the wilderness, but they died. This is the bread that comes down from heaven, so that one may eat of it and not die. Jesus is clearly stating that his Eucharist is greater than both of these amazing miracles, and the Catholic Church absolutely takes him at his word. Examining the truths of the Catholic faith, this is faithforensics.org.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
You know, I have a very hard time sometimes, and I'm so frustrated. I mean, frustrated. Somebody says, how'd you do all this, Mother? I say, I didn't. And they look at me. Huh? The Lord did. God does everything. Without me, he said, you do nothing.
For more information on Mother Angelica, visit Religious Catalog at EWTNRC.com.
I had a friend whose father died, and she interpreted finding pennies as her dad's way of communicating with her from the beyond. And she said, I've been finding a lot more pennies since dad died. And I thought to myself, obviously I wasn't going to dispute her, but I thought to myself, I wonder how many times before your father's death you found pennies, but you didn't give them any meaning. So as you gave them meaning after your father's death, would it seem like you're finding more pennies? That would make sense to me. It's like the old, I never realized there were so many cars of the kind that I drive on the road. Well, they were always there. You just didn't notice them, because now you have a car like that. Now, interestingly enough, my dad was born in 1927. I found a penny not so long ago. I forget where it was. It was either on the street or someplace you wouldn't expect to find a penny. And I picked it up, and the stamp date on the penny was 1927. Now, granted, it's unlikely to find pennies very often. Yeah, you probably find one every several months or so, but to find one, especially 1927, that's a wheat penny. Most people have taken wheat pennies and they hoard them. You just do not find an almost 100-year-old penny, but I did. Now, me being kind of a rationalist, I looked at that like, well, if it is anything to be interpreted in any way, I'm not doing it. But I will always leave open the possibility that it was. I can't know that. And God willing, if I end up in heaven, I'll find out. And hopefully Dad's there too. Daisy's calling from Minnesota. She's getting a lot of unsolicited advice regarding her special needs child. You got a special needs kid, and people are giving all their opinions, huh?
A little bit. You know, my family tries to be understanding, but my child is 15, and cognitively he's 3. Also, I'm a speech-language pathologist, and I worked in special ed for 30 years, about. And anyway, so I dealt with a lot of other special educators as well. A lot of times, like the classroom teachers now, it's a center-based program, and or just relatives. Oh, well, I get it because I work with these types of children, and it just drives me a little bonkers. But I try to not respond with, you do not know because you don't live it. Because being with somebody 8 hours a day is different than never getting a full night's sleep because they might have seizures or they might just be awake because they're on so many meds that are, you know, things like really, truly, you can't possibly understand. At the same time, I realize if you're asking for somebody's opinion, which is what you were talking about, it's different than just saying, yeah, you haven't walked in my shoes.
Why do you think that they preface their advice by saying, well, I understand, I get it? Why do you think they do that?
Because of their experience with working in a school setting is typically the reason, I would think. And they're probably trying to be helpful.
Okay, so they think they have somewhat expertise in this.
Correct.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you the technique that works for me. I hate to use that word. Maybe a response. A lot of people will tell me what I should have said, what I didn't say, what I don't understand, what I didn't experience. They'll tell me this. And so what I do here, Daisy, is I listen. I just listen. And I'll say, well, thank you. Thank you. That might be real helpful. And that's it. I more or less decide, okie dokie. If it's something I think I can use, great. If I don't, I just ignore it. That's what I would do. I try not to take it personally. I try not to take it as, no, listen. You're giving me advice on your one kid, and I've seen 722 with that same problem. So don't try to tell me. No, I don't do that. That's just foolish. So I would suggest maybe you do it too. You just smile and nod and let them think that they know what it's all about. If you find the advice helpful, great, take it. If you don't, just kind of smile. Besides, they probably think you're all burnt out anyway, so if you just smile, they figure she doesn't even understand what I'm saying.
There you go. That sounds awesome. Thank you. I love that idea.
Thanks, Daisy. I'll talk to you. One of the things he said is when somebody tells you something, gives you some advice that you could dispute or you could argue with, and it's not necessarily moral advice. It's just something about how you could live or what car you could buy because, you know, this magazine says this car's the best, or where you plant your flowers, whatever it might be. He always said, well, thank you. I'll ponder that. I'll take that under consideration. Makes them feel like, okay, they offered you something that you can put in your quiver, but you don't have to follow it. I remember when I used to play the organ in certain restaurants, the managers, that's their fiefdom. And they would come and tell you what songs to play and how to play them and when to play them and all that. And I would nod. I'd say, thank you. Good thoughts. And then I would just basically do what I thought was best for the crowd. And they never even noticed. They never ever came back and said, you know, you didn't play it the way I wanted you to play it. You didn't play the songs I wanted you to play. You didn't do it this way. They didn't. I don't know why that was. I think they felt affirmed if you just simply said, okay, we'll consider that. I'm going to run out of time here, and I do want to talk about more about this, getting advice, especially in situations, because Daisy's son or daughter, I don't remember what it was. I think it was a son. Being 15 years old with the developmental umbrella of about 3, that is significant developmental delays. I would indicate either some kind of genetic problem or brain damage at some point during birth or shortly thereafter, something, because that is a significant cognitive delay. That's an IQ well under 50. So, but anyway, I want to talk about perhaps why she reacts to other people giving her that kind of advice. And I didn't get into that in the call. I wanted to, but she was so happy with what I said that I thought I'm going to go out on top.
Living the Beatitudes with Father Bjorn.
Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. The virtue of purity and holy chastity is certainly a very important thing, but I think we can misunderstand this beatitude. As human beings in our fallen state, we tend to love things and use people. But we're meant to use things and love people. We can manipulate in relationships, and we can try to control other people, and we can focus on other people as objects. But to be pure in heart is to be in love, and ultimately to be pure in heart and to be happy is to be in love with God Himself as well. This beatitude calls us to have a focus on being open to choosing God, choosing life, to choose love. If God is not the ultimate end of our desires and our hopes and dreams, we will be the saddest of people. Let's say yes to God and choose His way, be focused on His love and pure in heart. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God.
For more about the Beatitudes, visit EWTNRC.com.
Christ is the answer with Father John Ricardo.
Are you passionate about Jesus? Are you zealous for Jesus? Are you fervent for Jesus? Are we fervent for the gospel? Are we passionate about helping this world come to know Him? Is that true? It's not true for most people in the church. Is Jesus my best friend? Is He your best friend? I'm looking around the church. There's a set of guys in here who have great man caves. As I was praying this morning, I felt like the Lord said, hey, when are you going to come to my man cave? Like, you guys think a flat screen TV is really cool. Well, you should see what I got to offer. Because I and I alone, He says, can really give you what it is you're longing for. Whoever it is we're rooting for right now, they're going to lose eventually. Or whatever it is that's occupying our time, one day we're going to realize it really wasn't that important. Why aren't we hanging out with the one who alone can show us what life is really all about? When's the last time you hung out in the Lord's man cave?
Talk a little bit more about Daisy's question, her frustration, getting unsolicited advice regarding her son. I think it was her son, who's 15, but the developmental age of roughly 3. And again, that's sort of misleading because development is just one big broad term, and there's all kinds of aspects to development. But he's significantly developmentally delayed. She's a speech and language pathologist, so you got to figure she knows a fair amount about developmental issues. And she says that she gets unsolicited advice from people trying to help, usually folks that are quote-unquote professionals in the field, but that she doesn't ask for. And one of the things that particularly wrinkles her, I didn't say wrinkle, said wrinkle. Wrinkle's a little stronger than wrinkle. Is that they imply they know what she's going through, and she's talking about, no, you have him for a certain period of the day and whatever intervention you're doing, but I live with him, and I live with unexpected seizures. I live with perhaps emotional lability on his part. She lives with him. And I thought about what would it be that bothers her? Because she said she thinks they're trying to help. But what would it be that bothers her? Now, one of my speculations is that She's reading that as an implication that she's not doing everything she could do for her son. Now, that may not be what they mean it as, but here's an idea you haven't thought of. And I'll get that. I get that routinely. For example, when I do a conference, somebody will come up to me and say, "You know what you didn't say?" And I want to say, "Well, I didn't say a whole lot of things. It was only a one-hour talk. I didn't talk about how to potty train your dog." But I don't say that. I go, "What was that?" And they'll tell me something that is a particular special insight that they have that I've heard from 294 people before. And I smile and I thank them. I don't want to take it as, do you think I'm that inexperienced that you have to tell me something like that? Because I don't want to do that. That's not cool. That's prideful. So I would suggest to Daisy, and I didn't do this because she was so happy with what I said. I thought, okay, I'm going out a winner. Is I would say, Daisy, what are you saying to yourself when they give you this advice that perhaps you've already thought about many, many times because you've lived with your son for 15 years and you've long since experienced all these things and all particular kinds of home interventions, strategies. So what are you thinking that when they're telling you this that frustrates you so much? And my guess would be part of it is that they may be implying that I haven't thought of these things. They may be implying there's more that I could do for my son. There's got to be something under it rather than just getting unsolicited advice. We get unsolicited advice about all kinds of things. I wanted to say, okay, Daisy, would it bother you as much if they give you unsolicited advice about what your next car should be? Or if they give you unsolicited advice on what works better for Windows than what you're using, what cleans Windows better? Would that bother you as much? And said, no. Well, then there's something about getting this unsolicited advice regarding your son that you're interpreting a certain way that bothers you. And my guess would be it is that you're reading it, hearing it as, well, here's something you ought to do, Daisy, that you never thought of. Or, I know exactly what you're going through. And you're thinking, no, you don't. Not at all, you don't. You don't live with this situation. You don't know anything about what I'm going through. All comes down to the interpretation. I'm looking at the clock, and I'm going to take a break now so I can take another call and then have time to talk about it till the end of the program. This is Dr. Ray.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Hello, Steve Ray here from Footprints of God Pilgrimages. The land of our Lord and our Lady is calling us. We're heading back to the Holy Land over Christmas break this year. We have the best, most reliable guides and services awaiting us. The holy sites are open, and the local Christians are anxious to see us. Galilee, Jerusalem, Nazareth, Bethlehem. No crowds, no lines. Hope you can join us.
Find the Ave Maria Radio travel tab at avemariaradio.net.
He was a mystic and reformer who died at the age of 33.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
St. Catherine of Siena accomplished something no one thought possible. She convinced Pope Gregory XI to return to Rome after the popes had lived in France for almost the whole of the 14th century. They've been there ever since.
For more about the Doctors of the Church, visit doctorsofthechurch.com. The following program is brought to you in part by MyCatholicWill.com. Surveys show that more than half of Americans do not have a will. At MyCatholicWill.com, it takes as little as 15 minutes to write your will and secure a legacy of faith. MyCatholicWill.com is the exclusive online destination for creating a Catholic will. The process of writing a will is simple and now more accessible than ever. MyCatholicWill.com, a legacy of faith for those you love.
All right, Andrew's very pleased with me and my producer, man, because I took the break to allow another call as opposed to getting mistimed, which is a sin when you're running by the clock. Let's go to Josie from Virginia regarding her elderly dad and his memory loss.
My parents, they're getting older, and they're, you know, not remembering things. They also speak two languages, so that, you know, is a brain drain. But they seem to have, I think, anxiety about not remembering, and I don't know how to counsel them about, or maybe I shouldn't be, but I'm wondering if this applies to, for example, the fear of not remembering as you're getting older.
Well, there's two levels to this, Josie. The one is they apparently have enough insight to recognize that they're not recalling, they're not remembering, not only just situations, but how to do things. And that's the scary part. When you no longer, you look at your checkbook and you go, I quite don't know what to do there. Or you look at a remote for the TV and it confuses you. What is this button? So now that can be scary. And that's very common when people are in an early stage of dementia and they're realizing something is happening. This is not me. This is not normal. I got lost. I got lost coming home, and I've traveled that way 2,700 times. So yes, you're right. There can be an anxious there. Is that what is going on with your parents?
That is one problem with one parent, but both of them, because they alternate between English and their born language and French, sometimes they get upset about not remembering the words they want to use, and they get very upset about it. I think in my dad's case, he tends to want to stay quiet because of that.
He doesn't want to show that he's fumbling.
Right.
Well, I'm not sure that that's any different, because he's not recalling something that was easy for him to recall 2 years ago.
Right.
And so you can ask him, Dad, does that scare you? Or Dad, does that bother you, if you don't want to use the word scare? Does that bother you, Dad? How much does that bother you? Dad, well, what do you think it means? I'm losing it. Well, gee, Dad, if you think you're losing it, then I could see why you would be really upset. But maybe it's just some normal memory loss with getting older. You could probably reassure him that way, even though it might not be that, Josie. It might be the front end, and it's the most early signs of him being less competent mentally than he was. That could be. Okay. Is it only happening with the language, no place else?
No, with him, it's other areas too. With my mom, it's the language. So I'm wondering if the approach is like what you said, which is the worry about it is taking away, you know, energy from the ability to do it also. But for my dad, it might be multi-levered, but for my mom, I think it's primarily the language.
I think your dad's a little further along than mom?
Possibly, yes.
Because it's starting to spread into some other areas where he was formerly competent.
Sure, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, he's in that, he's in that terrible stage of it. If it is an irreversible deterioration, and you don't know that because you might want to get a good, complete, strong physical, see if there's anything they can find. But if it isn't, if it's just sort of how old's your dad, Josie?
He's 85.
Boy, roughly 50% of people have mild cognitive impairment at 85. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't always lead to more serious dementia. Sometimes it just stays cognitive impairment. Mm-hmm. But 85 is well within the age range of something like this starting to happen. So that said, I think maybe the best thing to do is to kind of help him to understand that, in fact, Dad, we've got to focus on what you can do, not what you can't do.
Right.
He's scared. I bet he's scared. Yeah. Understandably so. There is that point in the downward progression of an incipient dementia where there's a lot of insight left, and the person recognizes full well, why can't I do that? What is happening there? What is going on with me? And that's very scary, because generally they know enough about some type of dementia impact that they're thinking, am I losing it, and am I going to continue to lose it, and how much am I going to get to the point where I don't even know who I am or who people are around me? That's very frightening. So to the degree that Josie can reassure her dad, which is, Dad, some of that's to be expected. And even if you're worried, Dad, about what's it going to lead to, you don't know that. You don't know that, Dad. You don't know how much you're going to struggle with this. You may not. You may, in fact, just lose some ability, but for the most part still be there. If he gets to the point where he says, no, more is happening. More is happening. I looked at putting something in the microwave the other day, and I thought, should I put this in here? I don't know if I should put this in here, and I don't even quite know how to work that. Or I've had guys that were pretty handy mechanically, and they started to work on their lawnmower and took a few pieces off and then got lost and couldn't figure out how to put those pieces back on. And that's scary for them. So how do you reassure someone like that? Because that was really Josie's question. How do I reassure them? And you do that through, Dad, you still got a lot of abilities left. We don't know exactly what this means, and we don't know the progress or the regress of it. Now, you could be thinking, no, this is definitely a mild stage moving into moderate of dementia, because Dad is losing some competence in a whole bunch of areas. I see that. I see that with Dad. All right. But you don't have to tell him that. You don't have to say, well, Dad, you know, given the way things are happening here, you know, it's a pretty good sign that you're in a early stage of dementia. Because that's kind of like saying, you can't get out of this. It's interesting enough, too, though. I had a friend who exhibited all kinds of confusion, all kinds of question marks regarding it. It seemed so clear. He was moving into an early stage of dementia at a young age. You know, the younger dementia hits you, generally the faster it progresses. You know, so if you get early onset dementia when you're 56 years old, it's going to move a lot quicker than when you're 85. But I thought for sure, man, this is something. Well, apparently, it has long since stopped. He returned to normal functioning. Now, I don't know if it was metabolic. I don't know if there was something going on with his whole system. I don't know. I don't know enough of the details on what they discovered. And interestingly enough, maybe they didn't even discover anything. But for whatever the reason, he seemed to reverse himself and get back to normal functioning, which surprised me. But in fact, it does happen. Even though if there's nothing identifiably physically going on, it's not all that common. Yeah, Josie's facing a situation where an elderly parent is realizing something's going on here, and I don't like it, and it scares me in its meaning. And to the degree that she can get to what it is that he's absolutely so scared about, she might be able to counter some of it. Gotta go. Thank you so much for joining me here on The Doctor Is In, my producer man and editor, Andrew Krucek. Good Lord permit. See you Monday when we have E-Person Monday. Walk with God. That's the walk you want to have no matter what happens to you at some point in your life.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRRay.com and follow him on Facebook and Instagram. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.